ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्री शुक उवाच, गर्गः पुरोहितो राजन् यदुनां समूहतपः व्रजनं जगमानन्दस्य वासुदेव प्रचोदितः। श्री ट्रांसलेशन, वी शैल रीड फ्रॉम वर्स नंबर 1 टू वर्स नंबर 4। वर्स नंबर 4 हैज अ परपोर्ट। Shri Sukadeva Goswami said, O Parikshit, O Maharaj Parikshit, the priest of the Yadu dynasty, namely Garga Muni, was highly elevated in austerity and penance, was then inspired by Vasudev to go to see Nanda Maharaj at his home. When Nanda Maharaj saw Garga Muni present at his home, Nanda was so pleased that he stood up to receive him with folded hands. Although seeing Garga Muni with his eyes, Nanda Maharaj could appreciate that Garga Muni was adhokshaja. That is, he was not an ordinary person seen by material senses. When Garga Muni had been properly received as a guest and was very comfortably seated, Nanda Maharaj submitted with gentle and submissive words, "Dear sir, because you are a devotee, you are full in everything. Yet my duty is to serve you. Kindly order me, what can I do for you?" Verse number 4. Mahat vichalanam nrinam grihinam dina chetasam nihisreyasaya bhagavan kalpate nanyatha kvachit. O my Lord, O great devotee, persons like you move from one place to another, not for their own interests, but for the sake of poor-hearted grihasthas, householders. Otherwise, they have no interest in going from one place to another. Report. As factually stated by Nanda Maharaj, Garga Muni, being a devotee, has no needs. Similarly, when Krishna comes, he has no needs, for he is Purna, Atma, Rama. Nonetheless, he descends to this material world to protect the devotees and vanquish miscreants. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashayacha dushkritam. Personality of Godhead. And devotees also have the same mission. One who executes this mission of para upakara, performing welfare activities for people in general, is recognized by Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as being very, very dear to him. Na cha tasman manusyeshu kaschinname priya krittamaha. Similarly, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has advised this paropakar, and he has especially advised in Bharat Bhumita Haila Manushya Janmayar Janma Sarthaka Kari Karo Paraupakar. One who has taken his birth as a human being in the land of India, Bharat Varsha, should make his life successful and work for the benefit of all other people. Chaitanya Chaitamrita Adilila 9.41. On the whole, the duty of a pure Vaishnava devotee is to act for the welfare of others. Now, for this purpose, and that his own duty now was to act according to Garga Muni's advice. Thus he said, please tell me what is my duty. This should be the attitude of everyone, especially the householder. The Varnashrama society is organized into 8 divisions: Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. Nanda Maharaj represented himself as Grihinam, a householder. A Brahmachari factually has no needs. But Grihi, householders, are engaged in sense gratification. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 2.44, Bhogaishvarya Prasakta Nam Taya Aprita Chetasam. Everyone has come to this material world for sense gratification. And the position of those who are too attached to sense gratification and who therefore accept the Grihastha Ashram is very precarious. Since everyone in this material world is searching for sense gratification, Grihasthas are required to be trained as Mahat, great Mahatmas. Therefore, Nanda Maharaj specifically used the word Mahad Vicharanam. Garga Muni had no interest to serve by going to Nanda Maharaj. But Nanda Maharaj, as a Grihastha, was always perfectly ready to receive instructions from a Mahatma and gain the real benefit in life. Thus, he was ready to execute Garga Muni's order. Lord Krishna shows the universal form. This is the beginning of the 8th chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam today. In this particular section of this chapter, we are seeing how Vasudev, who was still imprisoned in Mathura, continues his deep meditation on Krishna's welfare. Physically, definitely away from him, but through his heart, in intimate union with his dear son. This is also a type of union in separation. Nanda Maharaj is not aware that why Garga Muni has come. He is taken by sort of surprise. But Vasudev, who is sort of orchestrating these events from the background, so that he is aware that now his son is about 3 months old, right? 3 months? 3 months old? Correct. Trinavarta story? 3 months, yeah. And he has to get his name. So that person who has got unlimited names will get a name now. The one who is the source of everything, the source of all names. In one sense, God has no name, they say. Yet, now, in this section, God will get his bona fide name. And how blessed is Garga Muni to have the privilege, the honor, the great credential of giving God his name. It's wonderful. That's how special Garga Muni, Gargacharya is. Everyone in the 10th canto is special. Even the demons are special. Everyone can, because 10th canto is special. So, Vasudev is, his mood of, he's like that devotee who apparently remains always in that background and continues to see the welfare of his object of love, object of service, object of care, but is never in the forefront demanding respect, recognition and appreciation. Yet from wherever he is just so happy to see that his object of love and service is cared and nurtured and goes, everything what is supposed to happen is going to happen to him. So something like expectant behavior. Vasudeva doesn't get much glory if you see. Most of the glory is apparently taken away by Nanda Maharaj because he is in the forefront. He is with the hero, of course. The hero of Bhagavatam is Krishna. And one who is with Krishna, with the hero is always in the limelight. So here the limelight is on Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda. And apparently the hero's father is not even in the forefront. He is in a prison. Nonetheless, Vasudev represents this in particular section that a person who is completely non-expectant, he does his service as required, but he never craves for recognition. This is a definitely anartha with the heart has to deal. When we perform services, what to talk of services, even in our mundane life, forget for a while Krishna conscious activities, but if you understand the dynamics of relationship of this world, and we know that most miseries in this world today are not because of excess heat or excess cold or drought. They may be there. A tsunami comes and goes and a few thousand people are dead and it's over. Till the next one comes, of course. But it's over for the while at least. But the constant misery of human civilization is very bad human relations. Is it not? That's a constant thing. At any point of time, in any seasons, human relations are always the greatest challenge. So, if you see why human relations get damaged, why they get fractured, and why they break, it's most of the time because of expectations. Husband and wife, they have a very expectant relationship. And when it is not fulfilled, when one is not catering to the whims of the opposite person, so much misunderstanding, so much strife, so much conflict, so much of quarrel and fight, and oftentimes, unfortunately, even a breakage. Two brothers, two sisters, parents and children, what most of the time disturbs relationship is what? It's not the type of food you make which makes people fight in the house. Why did you not put salt today? That's very small things. You say it and it's over. But what really creates deep-seated relationship issues is when there is intense expectations in the relationship. Whether it's like from a counselor and his, counselee, or from a guru and his disciple. That if the guru is just expecting so much or a disciple is expecting just too much. When there is an imbalance of deep expectations, most of the time in parent-child relationship, we see this. The parents are dissatisfied because child is not catering to. And child is dissatisfied because parents are not catering to his. So, I think there is a deep lesson here which we can learn, that if we can make our relationships, whether with our parents, our brothers, our sisters, our uncles and aunts, our neighbors, our colleagues in office, or for the matter even Vaishnavas, to the extent we make them non-expectant, we eliminate the selfish motive which is deeply rooted in most relationships. We eliminate that and make it more and more non-expectant. Then it is much, much, much more easier to have a congenial relationship, because the admixture, the pollutant of expectant desires is not there to corrode a relationship. Expectations is like corrosion of a relationship. The iron is, the steel, stainless steel is very good, but still by the atmospheric presence of so many oxidants, there is corrosion in iron. So also, relationships are corroded by selfish motives and desires. If the desire is only, on the other hand, to love and serve, rather than getting, if the mood, I think Radhan Mara said recently, Prabhupada said that Vaishnavism is all about It's nice to, you know, sometimes paraphrase things in a nutshell and see what, oh, Krishna consciousness means this. Krishna means what? Always think of Krishna, like that. So like Maharaj said recently that Vaishnavism is all about giving. Such a nice statement, beautiful statement. It says so many things. It's a deep statement. Vaishnavism and Vaishnava is all about giving. We just give prasad to everybody. We just give. Devotees are just in the mood of giving. Of course, the opposite also is true. Non-Vaishnava behavior or materialism is all about. Materialism is all about taking. What can I get from you? What can I get from you? So if it is real Vaishnava society or real Vaishnava relationship or real Vaishnava's relation with other, even non-devotee relationships, then that Vaishnava can be judged in his relationship by how he is not expecting, but he is on the mood of always giving. If he is giving, then it is wisdom. Why? Because as Christ said, in giving is receiving. So it's such an intelligent turn of events that we may think that in digging is receiving, but Vaishnavas are really extra smart. I mean, Krishna gives this philosophy. This is so beautiful. The law of geometrical progression, in one sense, the exponential increase in terms of what you will get. You give love and see. Even if you give a love to a dog, how much the dog reciprocates. He will wag his tail and lick your body and pull your dhoti and climb over your back and bark at the strangers and get your newspaper for you and get your shoes for you to wear and everything. He will do everything for you. You just give some love to a dog and he gets sold out to his master. Trees respond to love. Fishes respond to love. There's a small video of a whale. Even a whale can respond to love. This whale was caught by this person who was got a big size whale. When he caught it, something, of course, a whale would be used for so many purposes. As we know, a whale is used for the fat is used for cosmetics and all sorts of, you know, bizarre uses of the cartilage and everything else. The whole body is going to be used in some industry eventually, or on the food plate, who knows. But something in his heart told him that I should release this whale, and he just left the whale. Again, when he would go for his surfing and his boating, and in the beginning he was concerned that it was going to topple over, the whale can just ram into his boat and the whole thing will capsize and he's finished. Of course, he's a professional swimmer, so not that he's finished, but it's a danger to his life in one sense. And the whale started giving signals that each person also got a thing that is not meaning harm. And the whale would just come up and just put his snout out and he just touched it and just touched it again. And after some time you find that the person goes out and embraces the whale from his boat, and the whale is swimming and the boat is also going, and they both are embracing, and they are sort of, he's playing around and almost he's putting his hand in the mouth and nothing is happening. I was sort of taken over by that, you know, emotional exchange of a subhuman aquatic species which apparently has no, you know, we would think is like a, you know, doesn't have an emotional credential whatsoever to exchange. But here, even with a human being, it can exchange love. So the whale somehow felt that this person actually could have killed me, but he didn't kill me. So I thank you for that. You saved my life. I would have been, you know, killed by, you know, and I would have. But something the whale told us that, oh, and the whale responded. We know how cows respond. We have heard stories of cows responding. So in a behavior where you just give, you show love, you show kindness, small acts of kindness, may not be big things, small acts of kindness, and then see how the relationships do so well. As far as Nanda Maharaj's behavior, because in Bhagavatam, ultimately, what really comes up so beautifully for all sadhakas like us to see is the behavioral aspect of the great Vaishnavas. The sadhana aspect is for us to do because we are practicing devotees, but here we don't find any sadhana because they are not sadhakas. They are perfected souls. So there is Nandamala is not going to be seen with the bead bag. Huh? And you don't find gopis with, you know, ever having a regulation of chanting a few rounds and like that. They are not at that platform. They are already perfected Nitya Siddha Bhaktas. So what comes up for us to see is the behavior of a perfected soul or groups of perfected souls and their interpersonal relationships. That's the most beautiful thing, because that's what we can really try to adapt and adopt into a Vaishnava situation, into a Vaishnava society, into a Vaishnava community. That's what we can really sort of allow it to fall, sort of replicate, or allow it to reflect amongst ourselves also when we deal with each other. So here we find Nanda Maharaj, he just stands up with folded hands, with such, and as we are reading this, we can almost sense the deep gratitude and respect which is oozing out of Nanda Maharaj's heart. That he's just so happy that the chief Purohit, the Raj Purohit of the Yadu dynasty has come to my house. Why should the Raj Purohit of Yadu? Yadu dynasty is a big dynasty, you know, the most powerful dynasty in the world at that time. Of course, that was succumbed by the Kamsa's tyranny of Kamsa. But Yadu dynasty was actually the ruler. And the Raj Purohit of that comes to a Grihastha's house, to my house. I'm just a householder. How grateful I am for that. So thank you very much. And then the most natural question which anyone could ask to any respectable person is being asked here. Whether it's meeting our most respectable person in the form of the spiritual master, or any respectable Vaishnava, or a friend, or even a relative, a senior person, how can I serve you? And such a beautiful question to ask anybody. Such a beautiful question to ask anybody. What can I do for you? Of course, in today's corporate world, when you fall on someone and say, yes, sir, what can I do for you? That, of course, they also say the same thing. How can I serve you? So it's something which even the materialists accept. If you have to make business in our industry, then we have to ask this question. How can I serve you? You know? But it is done with, of course, with selfish motives. But whether it is this or that, no matter where you are in any, whether you're in a Vaishnava industry or you are in a corporate industry, wherever you are, the question is still the same. This is what really makes a difference. How can I serve you? And we find Prabhupada going deeper into the psychodynamics of Nanda Maharaj's mind. Prabhupada sort of takes a microscope and dives deeper into his mind, where he says, where he talks about how he's not just, first is his physical side with hands. That's a beautiful mudra. So we find the physical aspect of respect is coming out here. When a great soul comes, anyone comes, we stand up first. We don't sit and say, whatever. We have to stand up, because standing up when a great soul comes is in itself a sign of showing respect through our body. Right? So we stand up. The next mudra of folding our hands, this is a sign of submission and welcome. Like this is swagatam. Right? So actually this mudra means that I am happy that you have come. You're not a botheration. So Rabbi not saying, kya hai? Kyun aaya? Not like swagat. And then the third part is the words. How can I serve you? And then Prabhupada goes even deeper, and in fact he ends with that particular psychodynamic analysis. He says that, and thus he was ready to execute Garga Muni's order. And we read up the previous things, right? So we find that Prabhupada talks about his mindset also now. That he's not just saying swagat and he's feeling something else. He's also feeling the same way as his body is moving, his hands are moving, as his words are moving. So find a sense of alignment of the body, the words, the mind, and the heart. This is the holistic approach to Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is a very holistic process. It is not about external acts of devotion alone, which are executed by the body. Spiritual life actually is a process of integration. Nothing about spiritual life is a disjointed thing. Spiritual life is always about wholesomeness, completeness, fullness, holism. It's all about that, right? What does it really mean? No matter what the body is doing, the body, the mind, the words, the intelligence and the heart are all integrated in devotion to the object of love, which in our case is Sri Sri Radha and Gopinath. When all of them are sort of aligned, that becomes a complete spiritual consciousness. Because the self, the word Atma in Sanskrit is not used only for the soul. It's very important to, you know, recognize that fact, that the word Atma also stands for the body. So Prabhupada says the self is the body, the self is the mind, and self also is the soul. So somebody may be thinking that the body is the self. Somebody who is a little better may think the mind is the self. And somebody who is really evolved may start thinking that the soul is the self. But all three are selves with different gradations of reality. The body also is the self with a temporal sense of reality. The mind also is a self with a deeper sense of existential understanding of what actually I am. But the deepest aspect of existence is revealed fullest when you understand that I am the body and the mind for the present moment, but I am more so, I am the soul. And I'm having a body and a mind, and it's a facility to fulfill my desires. The body and the mind is simply a facility for fulfilling the soul's desire. And Prabhupada very, very clear here that we all have come here for one purpose. What is that? Sense gratification. Prabhupada very clear. Right? So one person who is integrated in Krishna consciousness completely, what happens to him? He experiences a sense of, as I said, fullness, wholesomeness, completeness. And therefore that explains Prabhupada's words here where he says, a devotee has no needs. How can there be a person who has no needs? Wow, sounds amazing. No needs? Everyone has so many needs, so many desires, so many wants, so many... But when you are holistically filled with Krishna, then you become full. It's like when you have a full stomach. Do you need anything more after that? You just need to burp a little bit. So we create some more space to eat more. So we're so full, hopefully we can burp and drink some water afterwards or take some mukhwas or something, you know. Just so full, we want to have a burp at least, a good burp. That's all we need after a good meal. There's nothing more required after a good meal. Therefore, when we went to this Chitrakoot years ago, when these sadhus, Ram sadhus, they're there. And we were serving them prasad made by Arvind ji, Mafatlal ji. And after they're full, and they take a lot of time to become full, and they require a lot of quantity to become full. So when they're full, they say, Purnananda, 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 like that. This is complete. We are feeling sense of, it's like sense of completeness, full. We are full now. Like we say, we're full to the brim. Yeah, we say like that. Idha thala kaage avi. Full to the brim. So when a devotee is like that, when his soul is in alignment with Krishna, when his mind and his body are in the words alignment with Krishna, then he experiences the Atmarama state. Prabhupada talks here about brahmacharis. Now, they're going to be the people who have the most needs because they don't have a wife or home or privacy, enough clothes, not even hair. Not even any hair. Forget about clothes and, you know, they don't even hair. Even hair also is lost. So many things are lost. So he said, my God, I've lost everything in life, even my hair. So they should be the one who is most sort of feeling a sense of deficiency, lacuna and impoverishedness. But on the other hand, we find, Prabhupada explains, and rightly so, that they experience no desires. A good brahmachari, when he's aligned his body, his mind, his words with Guru's desire, there is complete alignment, then he experiences a state of being desirelessness. He has just no desire. That's how his body can get, his consciousness gets so full with the ananda of serving Sri Guru and Gauranga. So everything else becomes, okay, is there, not there, not there. So okay, chalega. But on the other hand, Grihastha has so many wants, so many desires. So he needs more training than a brahmachari. Because he has to really learn to align all his husband and wife and children and job and relatives and the distant cousins and everything else. How to align all that and the money he's earning. How to align all that and make it in channel. How to make it? So when we have this integration of all our aspects of existence, when we are truly integrated, then a wonderful quality emanates. Probably the most important quality of a Vaishnava, which makes a deep impact on Krishna's integrity. What is integrity? Integrity means that you are yourself an example of what you represent. When you are a perfect example in terms of your body, mind and words, what you represent, I may represent something, whatever. So, freedom fighter. He's truly at heart a freedom fighter. That means his body, he's working for freedom struggle. His mind is always thinking about how to do it. He's really a deep patriot. He just loves his country. And everything he does and everything he says and everything he desires, everything he plans, everything, all his resources are all for his desire to show his love for his dear country, his motherland. He's an honest, deep, genuine patriot. He's not just a show-bottle person. He's a genuine patriot. He's willing to do anything for the cause of his love, to serve his nation. And we find so many people were there in our country also. This is not very late history. Just 60-year-old history was there. But people were dying. They had such high integrity of their patriotism. Words would come on the roads. They were throwing gold on it. Because freedom struggle required money. And of course, Indians were poor and impoverished, even more impoverished when the British just sucked them away with everything. How do freedom fighters, you know, fight the struggle? So ladies were throwing their bangles, ornaments, money, everything was thrown there. That showed, okay, degrees, you are getting, we reject your degrees also. You don't want your degrees. That's a sign of integrity. Prabhupada was also, he was supposed to get his degree, but he didn't take his degree, right? He was supposed to get BA degree. He rejected the degree. Nationalist movement, it was a sign of integrity that this person actually is a nationalist because he's rejecting even the degree given by the Britishers. They are in the clothes made by them. We will wear our clothes, khadi. So all these signs were signs of deep integrity to what you represent as a genuine freedom fighter. And if you are not doing that, you are hypocritical freedom fighter. You are just saying, karna chahiye, azadi milna chahiye, whatever you are saying. But you know, look at this, you know, you are moving around in, you know, all this Western clothes and Western degrees and all Western cars. You are a rascal. So Krishna talks about it in the Gita, when he explains this word, mithyachara. The one who restrains the senses of action, but whose mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called as a pretender. As a mithyachara sa uchyate. That means there is a lack of integrity here. That there are external acts of profession of whatever he is supposed to profess as a devotee or whatever else he is. But his mind is, that's why Prabhupada condemns this meditation. There's nothing wrong with meditation. And we are not going to condemn this process. The meditation whereby the person sits in Padmasana or Virasana, whatever else, and regulates his breathing, and apparently shows a form of being a yogi. But when his mind is anchored to desires of sense gratification, that meditation is what we are against. That meditation is what Prabhupada is against. And he calls this as cheating. Right? So, the sannyasi has these three rods. That is a sign of integrity. These three rods of a sannyas danda are body, mind, and words. And the fourth small stick is the jiva stick. When all the three are together aligned in Krishna's service, then you are a sannyasi, whether you have a rod or no. Iha yasya harer dasya karmana manasa gira nikhila swapya avasthasu jivan mukta sa uchyate. Right? If you have these three things aligned, this is the sannyasi, is a person who has fully aligned his life, his body, mind and words in Krishna's service, right? So this is called as integrity. And therefore Kala Krishna Das, who apparently is playing the role of being a personal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and serving him with his clothes or his food or whatever else he was required to do, yet when he has a character whereby he allows his mind to dwell on a woman from the Bhattahari camp, right, and in fact weakens himself up, the more we allow a disintegrated approach to spiritual life, it's like living behind a hole for Maya to enter. A life of lack of integrity in Krishna consciousness is a big hole, or maybe even a small hole, for Maya to enter. So that attachment, Bhogeshwarya Prasaktanam Tayaprita Aprita. Aprita means aparhan. Aparhan means kidnap. The moment Kala Krishna has allowed his mind to dwell on the object of sense gratification, that was enough for Maya to capture his consciousness completely. So they entered through his mind and grabbed his body, grabbed his intelligence, grabbed his soul. So all three aspects of his self were grabbed and lost to the agents of Maya. So in Kala Krishna Das, we are learning the important lesson of a devotee who has not yet reached a state of true integrity to the object of his service. And that is why Mahaprabhu, among other very few people, he rejected. Now, if you don't find Mahaprabhu rejecting most, he is in the mood of accepting anybody. Dina, hina, yata, chilo, anybody, alcoholic, womanizer, anybody, anybody and everybody. He is here to make his arms so wide and so broad and embrace the whole world in the fold of his love. When the man comes, when the Lord comes with that mood of embracing the whole world as a loving father, why is he rejecting a person who was his personal servant? The child who is serving you, you're throwing him away. The Lord does things which are sometimes inconceivable. But acharyas and Prabhupada explains that it was to show the glory of the devotees that they accepted him and they engaged him in Krishna's service. But the point here is to be well taken that Mahaprabhu rejects hypocritical behavior. The opposite of integrity is hypocrisy. And that is the major, major, major anartha which dwells upon all people who are in spiritual life, not in ISKCON. Anybody in major struggle to live a life free from hypocritical behavior. And because the externals are very deceptive, we may take a garb of a devotee, we may have the language of a devotee, we may have the acts of devotion, but our heart or mind betrays our motives. Therefore, when Krishna says four things, Shiromani verse of Bhagavad Gita, when he says, first he starts with the mind. Bhavo Madhya Bhakti. He says, first the anchor. You see, Tharaji Thakur's story is very beautiful and relevant for all of us as practicing devotees, that we may not be making as much advancement as we can or should. We should be moving on at fourth gear or at least third gear or maybe at least first gear. But maybe sometimes we're going reverse because our anchor is there. As long as the anchor is there, then it says we are rowing, we are chanting, nirjal, whatever, yatra, doing all that, everything which needs to be done. Regular principles, yes, all that. That means we are rowing. Kidar, but moving forward, what's wrong with me? Because these are all ultimately external acts of devotion. But the biggest anchor is not this gross body. The anchor is where? Our subtle body. The subtle body is anchored, fixed into the objects of our attachment. And when they are non-Krishna conscious objects of our attachment, no matter what you do externally, our speed will be very, very slow at best. at best, right? So the first thing we need to do is to just remove this anchor. Therefore, Krishna first starts by saying, manmana bhava madbhakto. Then he says, manmana bhava, then he says, madbhakto. Now, madbhakto refers to the intelligence, the next higher. Intelligence is fixed in this one realization. What? Jivera swarup hoy, Krishna Ranitya Das, right? That I am a servant of Sri Krishna. Rather, I'm a servant of the servant of the servants of Sri Krishna. When our intelligence simply in this realization and understanding and awareness, then we are anchored to Krishna with our mind, and next is intelligence. Then he says, Madbhakto, Madhyaji. When these two things get anchored, mind, intelligence, then the third thing which can happen is properly, then we can do idya. Idya means to worship. Then we can perform external acts of worship nicely. Whether it is worshipping the Dham by Pada Sevanam, or worshipping the deity with Archana Vidhi, or worshipping the Guru by following instructions. When we actually have anchored our mind intelligence properly at Krishna's feet, then the Ijya comes. And the last and most beautiful is Mam Namaskuru. It is an external act of Namaskar, but it is the highest realization of complete, utter surrender. The most beautiful photograph you can ever see of a person is the Lord behind and he prostrated in front of the Lord in Sashtak Dandot Pranam. This is the most beautiful picture of any person that can be ever taken. No matter what else pictures, Yashika cameras and all that, great, wonderful. But there is no more beautiful picture which can be ever taken than Radha Krishna standing behind and the soul straight in front and said, my dear Lord, I'm yours. When he's in that mudra, that is called as Mam Namaskuru. So in these four verses, Krishna is actually telling us that we have to, this is where we truly anchor our consciousness to Krishna. Therefore, Kulashekar Maharaj is not talking about the body. He knows the body is going to be really, really ripped by disease and cough and mucus and kapha vata pittor. It's a manasa raja hamsa. This is about, again, about anchoring. The swan, Rajahamsa, of course, the king of swans, has the ability to put his beak right there in the rootlets of a lotus tree. And when it goes through the rootlets and enters the stem, where there is wonderful nectar. And when the neck goes through those, there are, it's called a fibrous root system. There is a biology, the fibrous root system. So lotus has a fibrous root system. Therefore, the neck can get sometimes stuck in the fibers of the roots. But that's what he wants to happen. Let my mind get anchored to the stem of your lotus feet. For the time of death, impossible to remember you, my dear Lord. Because my body will be disintegrated. What of integrity? My body will be disintegrated completely. Then how am I going to prove my attachment to your lotus feet? So now when I'm all right, my body is okay, I'm apparently healthy and all that, now let me think of you always. So removing the anchor from the objects of attachment of this world and placing that same anchor, we need an anchor, but place an anchor at Krishna's feet. When we anchor our mind at Krishna's feet, when we anchor it there, then that is the most secure. Nama Om Vishnu Pada. We are talking about all those great souls, whether it's our spiritual master or his spiritual master or his spiritual master or his spiritual master, all of them are Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. And there could be various things afterwards. But they all are people who have anchored their consciousness to Vishnu Pada. Therefore, sometimes they've been called as Vishnupad. They also, the person who has had his consciousness anchored to Vishnu's lotus feet is called Vishnupad. One of the names of a guru is Vishnupad or Prabhupad. It's all about pad. It's about lotus feet because they've anchored their consciousness there. So we are praying to Nanda Maharaj's behavior that he is not just pretending to be, oh, you have come, very nice, thank you very much for coming. What can I do for you? He's saying with his body, he's saying with his hands, he's saying with his words, And he's saying with his heart, and Prabhupada talks about here, and now he is ready to execute the order of Ganga Muni. So when we live a life of such integrity, which should be tested, integrity is not something which is a cheap quality to attain. It is a test. It is a quality which only can be bestowed upon the sadhaka after being thoroughly tested. Sivananda Sen was arrested by a very tyrannical, powerful decoy type of person. And somehow he had a secret love towards Jagannath. He was asked this question. I may not be telling the proper details of this story I heard many years ago from Maharaj. So he knew that he's the worship of Lord Chaitanya. So I think the question was, who's greater? Jagannath or Lord Chaitanya? And it is known that he is a Jagannath worshipper. So by simply saying that Jagannath is the Supreme Lord and he's the greatest, and he would have pleased this person, otherwise he was in a death threat. So he was severely tested. His faith said, Lord Chaitanya. He's the same person, of course, he's greater because he's he's moving around, giving his mercy to everybody. So in one sense, they are one, and yet they are different. Achinda Bheda Tattva. When you are serving Krishna and the devotees with so much of headache, like in a yatra, and somebody comes and kicks you on your chest, you know, then your integrity is highly tested. And you can really blow your mindset. What nonsense, you know, you're kicking me. I'm doing so much for all of you here. And I'm struggling with the toll tax fellows, and I have to take this dog around, and all you guys are doing nothing, and you're just having a nice time doing kirtan, playing murdanga, and eating prasadam. And I'm doing all this hard work, and somebody comes and kicks me on my chest because he didn't get his food in time. What nonsense. But lo and behold, the glory of Sivananda Sen's integrity. He was happy, smiling. Wow, so nice. Yes, a son should die because, you know, we delayed Nityananda Prabhu's offense. Integrity. Haridas Thakur in the jungle, alone forest, beautiful, young, handsome man. That's a very beautiful person. Of course, his heart was beautiful, but he was physically also a very charming, young man, handsome person. So whatever the prostitute was saying was not just say, you are young, you are beautiful. He was actually young and beautiful. He wasn't just trying to seduce him. He was actually like that. Integrity is being tested severely. You are in a jungle. Who cares? Only the trees are seeing. Okay, the trees will not bear evidence anywhere. But you all sit here and with me. So all of the moment, arbadi hour, our internal heart is being tested. And there we have to prove somehow to the Lord, my dear Lord, I have these problems, I have these fallacies, I have the limitations, I have my deep fallen nature. Nonetheless, please accept my motive to somehow purify myself. I'm trying to do this by acts of devotion, like chanting, worshipping deity, this and that, whatever I'm doing. But accept my desire. I want to really purify myself. If Krishna sees this deep intent, then he puts you in the category of being a devotee who has integrity. And integrity is a long-term commitment to the object of your love. Integrity cannot be a quality which can manifest in 6 months of devotion or 5 years of devotion. Integrity is a long-term affair. When a person under various situations, Helen Storm, when he still remains loyal to his object of love, then we can say, yes, he has integrity. It is not something which, yeah. 6 months, first few years, all of us are really, really jumping around in Krishna consciousness with a lot of, but if you go through all sorts of situations in life and still hang on to that anchor of, then you pass. So let's learn these beautiful lessons from Nanda Maharaj, the father of Sri Krishna, and pray for this great quality. And therefore, as Prabhupada says, become Atmaram, full of Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Very well. I think we are very late for questions. Hari Babu.